Hello, said Megazone, waving his hand before her blank stare. Utina blinked, surfacing from her dive into memory. She must have been standing there lost in it for several minutes. He'd finished with the sausage and put it aside on a paper towel-lined plate and was starting in on what looked like French toast. She shook herself and said, "What are you doing here?" "Cooking." Her look told him that answer would not be sufficient. "I live here," said Zoner. "Well, sort of. My best friend lives here. Technically, I live next door, but we've all got keys to each other's places on this block, and we come and go. Very informal, you understand. I heard you and Kate were going to be back for break today and figured you'd like some breakfast." "Griff never gets up in time to make breakfast," he added in a confidential tone, leaning close and darting his eyes about comically as if looking for someone who might overhear. "You know, you, Kate's parents?" Utina sputtered, then stopped herself and tried again, asking him for the fourth time, "Who are you?" "Haven't we had this dance? I'm Megazone." "I know that, but who are you?" Utina asked, somewhat edgily. "How far have you gotten in galactic history?" Zoner replied. 1985. He nodded. "You haven't gotten to me yet, then. In 1985, I was only 14. I hadn't done anything really notable yet. I won't show up for another 6 years." At her astounded expression, Zoner went on. "What? Didn't Kate tell you? I, her parents, a few others, we're all immortal. Perpetual college kids from the late 20th century." He grinned. "Explains why the universe is so screwed up, doesn't it?" "She told me," Utrina replied after a moment. "I just wasn't entirely sure she wasn't kidding." "Nope," said Zoner. "It's all true. You'll meet her father today if he ever gets out of bed, the lazy bastard. Give the guy a week off and he spends the whole thing asleep. In the meantime, sit down. I'll get you a waffle." She sat and waited patiently while he worked. "Nazen," said Zoner, suddenly and for no apparent purpose, adopting a ridiculously exaggerated French accent. He leaned over the central counter toward Utina, his arm held at his side as if a towel were draped over it, and inquired, "Pardon me, mademoiselle, was that the sausage link or patty?" Utina looked back at him for a moment, then grinned and said, "Oh, what the hell, I feel Gigi. Let's say link." Zoner smiled broadly. "Aha, I see you've been absorbing Kate's old audio tracks. You grow lovelier by the moment. Link it is." So saying, he plied his spatula, and three links of sausage landed toward the left side of Utina's plate, followed shortly by a couple of waffles that dropped neatly into the space left for them to the sausage's right. "As to syrup," he announced, displaying a rack of small oblong bottles he hadn't had a moment before, "we have a wide variety available. Please permit me to help you with your selection. Blueberry, strawberry, boysenberry. I don't know what the hell boysenberries are," he added in a confidential tone, "but it's traditional. Perhaps a nice dry maple. It is busy, but never precocious." Zoner put a hand over his heart and gave a rapturous little sigh that went ridiculously with his imposing countenance. "Ah, mademoiselle, you are too wonderful," he declared. "If only I were not..." He screwed up his face in concentration and made a little fiddly gesture. "You can't take three from two. Two is less than three, so you look at the four in the eighth place. 420 years too old." Brightening, he took the brown cap bottle from the rack, handed it to her, and made the rest disappear. "Maple, my lady, you shall have." As Utina started on her first helping and Zoner kept working, the smell of cooking food started to draw other members of the household. First, Caitlin appeared, yawning in her eye-shattering tiger-striped pajamas. Then Nall, who came wafting scruffily in on little wings like a cartoon character following a visible scent, moaning softly, "Sausage." Utina took this in stride. She hadn't seen him do it before, but he claimed to be a dragon, so it only stood to reason that he could fly. Next to appear in the doorway was a young man Utina hadn't seen before, dressed in a kendo costume, white quilted jacket over gray hakama. He looked to be about the same age as Corwin, a couple of years younger than Kate, and was a bit taller, with long, thick, dusty red hair tied back in a heavy fall with a ribbon, and impressive upstanding bangs that crested in front and then fell to obscure one of his eyes. As Utrina looked more closely at him, she realized that his honest-looking face had the same pale blue eyes as Corwin, so this must be Leonard. "Morning, Len," said Zoner, confirming this suspicion. "Laundry day again?" "Hmm," said Leonard, nodding. Then he seemed to notice that there was someone at the table he'd never seen before. A touch of red entered his cheeks, and he tugged the overlap of his jacket a little more tightly closed. "Len," said Kate, "my roommate, Utrina Tenjo." Len bowed and said, "I'm very pleased to meet you, Miss Tenjo. I'm Leonard Hutchins."
"Mr. Leonard W. Hutchins III," said a voice behind Len grandly, and Len stepped aside to look with an expression of mingled irritation and fondness at a girl who looked as much younger than he as he was younger than Kate. She was a slim, cute little thing with a pageboy mop of coal-black hair and eyes to match, and she favored Utrina with an insouciant grin. "Hi, I'm Sylvie Daniels, spawn of Megazone." She angled a thumb behind her. "Pris and Guy are still lazing around in bed. Boy, are they in for a surprise when they wake up," she added, snickering darkly. "Sylvie, what have I told you about your little pranks?" Zoner said in a tone of resigned semi-severity. "Go back up there and put the twins back the way you found them before they wake up and Guy has a heart attack or something." Sylvie slumped. "Aw, Dad, some avatar of chaos you are," she muttered.
"Go!" said Zoner, pointing with a spatula.
Okay, I'm going," Sylvie said, and she turned and slouched out, mumbling about people being no fun at all.
Utrina looked at Kate, who shrugged as if to say, "Hey, none of my business." A few minutes later, Sylvie trooped glumly back with two more redheads in tow, a boy and a girl, both about her own age, both with rusty red hair a shade or two darker than Leonard's dusty sheaf. They looked sleepy and disoriented, and in most other respects a good deal like each other. She, it was obvious, would be beautiful in adulthood, and he strikingly handsome. The boy's hair was a little lighter and coarser, his gray-blue eyes a little darker, but they had similar faces, and the family resemblance to Len and Kate, though somewhat muted by the twins' beauty, was still obvious.
"I guess the gang's all here now," said Zoner, "except for your lazy parents," he added, flipping out another waffle from the iron and passing it to Kate.
"Kate's roommate, Utrina Tenjo," said Sylvie, indicating the aforementioned. "These," she went on to Utrina, "are the galactically famous Morgan twins, Pris and her tragically scrupulous brother Guy," who'd rather you spelled it Guy.
"Nice to meet you," said Utrina.
"Sylvie," said Pris testily.
Guy looked embarrassed.
"What?" Sylvie replied, her face the picture of innocence. "Sit down and get ready for waffles," said Zoner briskly, passing out sausage.
Utrina glanced at Kate, who shrugged again with her little private smile.
"Interesting family, isn't it?" she asked.
"Well, we try," said a voice from the archway, and Kate was up out of her chair and across the room in a moment, big smile on her face, to embrace the shortish, stocky fellow who was standing there. For a moment, Utrina thought he must be another brother, perhaps a somewhat older one, for he didn't look far out of his teens, if at all. Then she remembered what Megazone had said about perpetual college kids and realized he was Kate's father. Now that she'd realized that, she understood. He had the same brown hair as Kate, though without the hint of a curl Kate's had. It hung straight and fine, pulled back into a ponytail, and his eyes were the same ice blue as Corwin's. His face somewhat resembled both, but more so Kate, with that same effect of being pleasant to look at without being particularly striking. The red-headed twins, Utrina reflected, must have inherited more of their looks from their mother. For that matter, so much Corwin, but then he had a different mother. This was indeed an interesting family.
"Welcome home, Kate," said the new arrival softly. "Oh, it's good to see you home."
Kate held on to him for a few seconds, then let go, backed up a little, and said,
"Dad,
I want you to meet my roommate, Utna Tenjo.
Utna,
this is my father, Benj... She shook her head, sighed, and started again. Benjamin Hutchins. Most people call him Griffin.
Or you can call me Ben or whatever, he said, extending a hand. I'm not as militant about the nickname as some people I could mention, he added, cocking his head at Zoner with a grin. Anyway, I'm glad to meet you.
Utna took the hand and shook it, each favorably impressing the other with their handshake, not a contest of strength, but not one of those disappointing wag-em-by-the-fingertips deals either, and laughed as Zoner protested with mock primness.
Megazone is my name, my full, proper, legal, and only name. I understand not this nickname of which you speak.
I'm pleased to meet you too, Mr. Hutchins, said Utna, only to have her host wince.
I'm sorry? She added uncertainly.
Griffin laughed it off.
Nah, it's okay. You just make me feel so old when you say it that way, he said.
You are old, Dad, Kate pointed out.
Oh, thanks, Kate. You're a big help. Griffin grumbled.
So where's Kay? Zoner asked.
Yamaki, said Griffin in a rather disgruntled tone as he sat down next to Kate's place. She left last night.
At Christmas time? She never takes holiday assignments anymore.
Oh, she'll be back for Christmas Eve, or there'll be hell to pay, Griffin assured his friend. What about Yuri?
She's with the other man, said Sylvie offhandedly.
I thought I was the other man, Griffin protested.
The other man, Sylvie said patiently. The corporate one.
Oh, him, said Griffin with a dismissive gesture.
Utna glanced at Kate, realized that she was never going to get any help from that quarter, and went on with her breakfast. Corwin arrived last, to whistles and applause from his siblings and derisive hoots from Nall, not for his tardiness, but for the reason for it. Unlike the rest of them, who had wandered down at the smell of food in deshabille, Corwin had showered, dressed neatly in fresh, clean clothes, and this was the part that really got Nall howling, combed his unruly mop of inky hair into sleek, gleaming order. The effect was temporary. As it dried, his hair reassumed its own devices, jutting up at random angles in that rather pleasing disarray that Utna found almost irresistibly muscible at times.
"Act like you've never heard of anybody bathing before," Corwin muttered as he took the only remaining seat to Utna's left.
Good morning, Utna, he added in kind of a strained mumble, his face reddening.
Morning, said Utna brightly.
Oh my, Sylvie mused, sing-song fashion, into her milk glass. What's happened to Corwin?
This is new and different, Pris concurred.
He looks the same to me, said Guy, puzzled.
Oh, Guy, you're hopeless, said Sylvie.
Griffin and Zoner shared a glance of private amusement.
Lay off, Sylv, Corwin grumbled. I'm not in the mood.
Sylvie grinned at him. Not feeling well, Cor? Little lightheaded, maybe? Heart going too fast? Blood rushing to your...
Sylvie, said Zoner sharply.
Face, said Sylvie without missing a beat, causing the very phenomenon she'd named. Nall rolled right off the edge of the table, laughing.
Go easy, said Utna. He had a long day yesterday. You can't expect him to run on all cylinders first thing in the morning.
Corwin glanced at her, saw her dart him a quick private grin, and felt a curious combination of further embarrassment, relief, and a strange kind of warmth he couldn't identify.
Damn it, what can possibly be the matter with me? He wondered. I've got to get this checked after breakfast.
After breakfast, the troop broke up, scattering to their respective rooms in morning, well, noontime, Utna discovered when she got back to a room that she'd awakened at about 11, activities. Utna thought there was something vaguely decadent about a house where every bedroom, including the guest room, had its own bathroom, but she certainly wasn't in the mood to argue with Kate's father's design decision. With that many kids, it was worth the extravagance. She used the facilities,
Where, she wondered, had Griffin found all those huge old-fashioned clawfoot tubs, assuming the other bathrooms all had one too, and dressed for the day, then went upstairs to knock on the door of Kate's room, easily identifiable by the large sign reading, Kate's Chamber of Secrets. Kate opened up, wrapped in her tiger bathrobe, still drying her hair, and gestured Utna in. Utna did so and looked around, taking in her first sight of her friend's room at home. Like the guest room, it was a comfortably sized bedroom, a little bigger, perhaps, but with a slope to the ceiling and dormered windows that gave it pleasingly odd proportions. It had simple, substantial-looking furniture made of an attractive reddish wood, a king-size bed, a desk with four drawers and shelves above, a large, mostly full bookshelf along one wall, a bureau and wardrobe. The walls were covered in a wallpaper that was printed to resemble old sheet music, yellow with age, its handwritten notes faded to brown. Utna wondered what piece of music it was. The bed seemed a bit empty with just the pillows and coverlet on it. It was odd to see any bed Kate slept in devoid of stuffed tigers. Well, almost devoid. Seven, the ancient, battered specimen which was Caitlin's oldest and favorite toy, still had pride of place next to the pillows. Seven went everywhere with Kate, and had since her infancy, which might help to explain his rather bedraggled, threadbare state. He'd even gone to Toronto, though he hadn't come out of Kate's duffel bag except on the second night at the Raider Dome Hotel. So, said Utna as she plunked down on the edge of Kate's bed, what's on the agenda for today?
I have to finish my Christmas shopping, said Kate as she hunted through her closet. I thought I'd ask Corwin to take us to the Galleria. But first, there's someone I want you to meet.
Said Utna. She let herself fall onto her back, looking up at the ceiling, and toyed idly with Seven's yarn whiskers.
Kate?
Kate replied as she dressed. Thanks for inviting me. I'm already having a good time. Your family's a lot of fun. She chuckled. The domestic arrangements are a little weird.
Oh? You think so?
Kate replied. She pulled her head through the neck hole of a New Avalon Institute of Science sweatshirt, raked her hands through her hair to free it, and looked back over her shoulder at her roommate with an impish grin.
Tell me again about your engagement?
Utna sat up, going a little pink across the bridge of her nose, rubbed at the back of her neck, and said with a wry grin,
Okay, so you've got a point.
Below the city of New Avalon, below the utility channels and the tunnels used by the New Avalon Transit Authority's galactically famous subway system, known by its friends as the N, there exists a further set of tunnels and bunkers, oversized and overbuilt to support military hardware. These tunnels had been envisioned as a civil defense network, enabling the quick and easy transfer of destroids, armor, and other defense assets throughout the city in case of attack. Only after these tunnels were in place did the city planners, foremost among them Griffin, realize that it was completely silly to have them. The city was inside a Dyson sphere jacketed in carbon neutronium. If anyone breached the sphere, the city of New Avalon had bigger problems than civil defense. So the tunnels had been sealed up and left unused. Corbin Ravenhair had, in the 13.5 years of his life to date, annexed about 10 miles of them, centered around the downshaft under his father's house on Morgan Lane, as his own private playground. The son of the Norse goddess of technology, he dabbled in robotics, weaponry, and other such wholesome pursuits, and his underground lab in New Avalon was where he liked to do his dabbling. Now he lay on a Medicom 3000 diagnostic table, fretting while the beam of marker light swept over him. Eventually it snapped off, and he sat up and turned toward the operator's station.
Well? He asked.
The girl standing there, a pretty, if slightly sullen-faced, pale creature in perhaps her middle teens, raised her auburn head slowly and deliberately from the panel to look at him with unimpressed dark eyes.
Everything seems normal, she replied, her voice as flat and uninterested-seeming as her expression.
Are you sure? I checked twice, as you requested, she said.
Slag, he cursed, and hopped down from the table. There's got to be something wrong with me, Dorothy.
Describe the symptoms, Dorothy instructed him, not sounding as if she cared much.
I keep losing my train of thought, my concentration's shot. Sometimes my hands tremble, and I feel like I've forgotten how to talk. My stomach feels funny, and I get lightheaded.
Dorothy gazed impassively at him for a moment.
When did this start?
Yesterday afternoon.
When you arrived in Worcester?
Yes.
When you met Caitlin's roommate?
Well, yeah.
This roommate is presumably a girl?
What the hell's that got to do with anything? Corwin burst out, waving his hands exasperatedly.
Dorothy stared at him for a few seconds, her face blank.
Question withdrawn, she said, pivoted with a smart about-face, and disappeared into the next room.
Corwin sighed. What's gotten into her runcoat all of a sudden, he wondered. Maybe it's time to clean out her log files again.
Seems kind of silly to me, Utrina complained, her breath escaping in white wisps as she marched behind Caitlin, getting all bundled up just across the street.
Can't be helped, Kate replied as she hopped up the step at the curb, giving the word Rose on the side of the mailbox a glance. He fusses about that kind of thing. Anyway, we're lucky he's at home. He's a cop, so he works most of the time. Next real chance would be the big Christmas Eve dinner.
Utrina started. But by that time, Kate had already pushed the doorbell. Rather than the usual chime, this act was greeted by the sound of some enormous choir singing, Hallelujah!
What the hell? She finally completed on a completely different train of thought, giving Caitlin an opportunity for an indulgent chuckle.
It was only a few seconds' wait before the door opened, the gasket around the door sounding a muffled crack as it did, and Utrina got her first good look at he. All things considered, he seemed pretty unremarkable. Dull brown hair, lighter than Caitlin's, eyes that seemed stuck in indecision midway between blue and brown, and no particularly distinguishing features. Save, of course, for the fact that he looked about as tall as Moose McEachern, who was a Hoffmanite, but definitely wasn't built like him. Much, much too thin. He got out a hello, and then looked down.
Kate! He cried, breaking into an enormous smile and pushing the door wide open.
Marty! She grinned and hopped forward, arms open. He caught her readily, and they collided into a long, quiet hug with Kate's toes dangling at about mid-shin on him. Utrina blinked with momentary surprise and then smiled at the tableau. She suppressed a small twinge of jealousy, though she wasn't sure exactly who she was jealous of. Marty, for making her so happy just from his presence, or Caitlin, for having someone that made her that way. Soon he stepped back, Caitlin still draped in front of him, and waved Utrina in with his left hand. Come in, come in, he muttered through Kate's hair, and Utrina did so, stomping some bits of slush from her feet on the mat just inside the doorway. We'll just be a bit here yet.
Take your time, Utrina replied, pushing the door shut and quietly slipping out of her coat. Seeing nowhere else convenient to put it, she slung it over the arm of a nearby sofa.
Caitlin's feet finally touched down as she slipped off of him and stepped back.
There, that should do it for about 4 months, give or take.
I'll get in touch with accounting, he smiled. We can make up the difference later. At any rate, you seem to have brought...
Marty brought himself up short, Utrina guessed, from saying the next thing on his mind. He regarded her with an expression of mild surprise and finally finished,
a refugee from the Barbie Isle.
Apparently, what he'd finally decided on wasn't much better than the initial reaction.
Caitlin tisked and wagged a finger at him.
Now, now, you know the rules. You're not allowed to tease people you don't know.
Yeah, I know, he groaned.
I'm sorry, but even considering Wapiko, that's more pink than I see on a regular basis. Plus, you're supposed to be fixing the people I don't know part. Of course. Kate nodded, and Utina stepped up, recognizing as clear a cue as there could be. Uncle Marty, this is Utina Tenjo, my roommate at the Big W. Utina, Detective Chief Inspector Martin Rose, CID. He smiled pleasantly and bowed a bit, taking Utina's proffered hand. A pleasure, Miss Tenjo. I hope my comments haven't put you off too badly. She stared at him, quietly scrutinizing his face, as she had ever since she heard his name, seemingly lost in thought. He blinked and cocked his head slightly to the side. You okay there? Huh? She shook herself lightly as she emerged from the contemplative funk. Yes, sorry, I'm fine, it's... Her voice trailed off as she resumed gazing at him. I'm not sure. Do I know you? We haven't met, but you seem familiar somehow, just not directly. He gave Kate a knowing glance, and one corner of his mouth quirked into a faint smile. Perhaps on TV, he replied. After all, he shifted into his business voice and rumbled, I am the terror that flaps in the night, you know. I knew you were going to work that line in somehow, Caitlin grumbled in mock exasperation. The line, however, had the desired effect. Utina's eyes widened, and her lips rounded in surprised recognition as puzzle pieces assembled within her mind. Oh, she said quietly, then more firmly. Oh, right, yeah, I remember now. You're Kate's crazy, prudish old superhero unc. Her speech processes came to an abrupt halt as Martin watched her with a silent, knowing smile. To her side, she heard a light slap and turned her head to find Kate with her glasses pushed up onto her forehead and her hand covering her eyes. Ol, she completed, flushing bright red behind a sheepish grin. Oops, guess I shouldn't have said it quite like that, huh? He stifled quiet laughter. Don't feel bad. At least now I know what she really says about me to her friends. That does it. Kate muttered from behind her palm, pointing at Utina with her other hand. Next time we cover Santana's Smooth in concert, I'm not dedicating it to you. Martin found his laughter a bit harder to contain. I hear guests! A new voice, feminine and a bit on the cute side, called out from around a corner. Utina looked toward the source and saw the outside edge of a kitchen. Who goes there? It's me, Aunt Echo, Kate responded, pushing her glasses back down to her nose. I'm home for break. Caitlin? There were a couple brisk footsteps on tile, and then Utina saw where the voice was coming from. Well, the cute part was accurate, that's for sure. The girl who emerged from the kitchen had bright red hair that reminded Utina a bit of someone she'd once known. No other aspect of her resembled him, though, particularly not that warm smile or those cheerful blue eyes. She looked fairly young, maybe around the same age as herself and Kate, and a couple inches shorter to boot. That phenomenon was taking a lot of getting used to, seeing all the exceptional adults who surrounded Kate's life in person for the first time. These two, according to Kate, had been married for something like 40 years. Kate, hi! She beamed, pulling Kate into a quick hug. We've missed you so much. How have you been? Fine, Aunt Heiko, Kay smiled. I brought my roomie from school to visit. Roomie? Echo asked, glancing over to Utina. I thought you were getting a single this year. She came after the first day, Caitlin explained as Utina stepped forward. There was, after all, no reason not to be polite. It's okay, she's been great. Utina, this is Echo Rose, matron saint of Band-Aids. Aunt Echo, Utina Tenjo. The two smiled, clasped hands, and exchanged the usual sort of pleasantries. Utina then looked over to Kate. Saint of Band-Aids? Echo giggled and responded with a cheerful smile. Oh, sure. Seems I was patching poor Caitlin up every other day when she was little. Her mom and dad had such busy jobs, and, well, being the only real homebody around, I was happy to pick up the slack.
"Well, want to see something cool?" Kate asked Utina, who, suspecting she knew what that something was, grinned and nodded.
Kate turned eager eyes to Aiko.
"Can we?"
she asked. "Oh, okay," said Aiko with a cheerful semblance of resignation. She vanished in a scarlet blur in a gust of wind for a few moments, and then, just as abruptly, reappeared. "I keep it on the dresser when I'm cooking," she explained, lifting her arms. Her right forearm now wore a polished metallic armlet, and set into the armlet was a large circular gemstone which glowed a soft scarlet, which Aiko covered loosely with her left hand. The sight of the shining gem made Utina gasp. That very moment she knew, with no doubt whatsoever, exactly who this was.
"Come to my hand!" Aiko commanded, and the soft scarlet glow exploded, reaching straight up, forming a long, thin shaft with what looked like a cross-mounted cylindrical head. She grabbed the not-yet-solid shaft with her left hand, pulled it out and away from the gemstone, and spun it in her fingers as it congealed.
"Stormbreaker!"
With one final slap, she caught the spinning shaft in her right hand. The glow shattered like a dropped plate, revealing the object's true form, a tremendous warhammer, nearly as long as the woman holding it was tall, its head larger around than her own. Grinning ferociously, she twirled it as effortlessly as a cheerleader would a baton, skillfully spinning it around herself, and finishing her routine by stopping it in a high-held vertical position.
"Zzzzt!"
is an approximate spelling of what Martin blurted, and Aiko pulled her final gesture short.
"What?"
she asked testily.
"Please don't stake it into the floor,"
he muttered through a grin made of pure cheese, waving his hands in a futile panic-dispelling gesture.
"We've already had to fix divots in the foundation this year."
Aiko heft, shouldering the hammer.
"Oh, all right. But the ending poses part of the motif."
Utina, who had watched many episodes of Thunder Force with Kate, and was in her own right no stranger to mysterious, mystic phenomena involving melee weapons, was nonetheless impressed.
"Wow. The strongest woman in known space. Is that thing really as heavy as they say?"
Aiko smiled, lifted Stormbreaker from her right shoulder, and dropped it into her left hand. She let her hand slide down the shaft, stopping when her thumb was nearly touching the head. Then, propping the head up with her right hand, she turned the handle around to face between Utina and Kate. "Push down," she offered, opening her left hand to act as a fulcrum. Utina regarded the white metal shaft for a moment, noticing some detail work in the smooth surface and a bit of gold inlay near the tip that she hadn't noticed before, and then wrapped her hands around it and pushed. It didn't budge.
"Harder," Aiko suggested.
Utina grunted and pushed down harder, still with no results. Snorting through her nose, she adjusted her grip on the handle so that her elbows were raised and tried again, and again leaning into it, and again laying across it with her chest. Aiko just watched with that same smile. Baring her teeth with a growl, Utina jumped up, locking her elbows, and applied her full weight to the task, hanging on it with her feet completely off the floor. She tried bouncing a few times in an effort to at least jar it loose, and squealed with surprise when that maneuver resulted in her flipping head over boots like a gymnast on the parallel bars. Kate chuckled as she completed the flip and finally let go, landing with her feet together and rising with a grin and a self-mocking gymnast's bow.
"Whoa," Utina said. "If I didn't believe it before, I sure do now."
Aiko nodded with satisfaction, then twirled the weapon in her left hand again and touched the tip of the handle to the gemstone. It was instantly absorbed in that familiar red light and retracted back inside the gem. Utina regained her poise and pointed to her arm.
"And that jewel, that means..."
"Yes, it does," Aiko replied, still smiling. "Like Marty, I'm a gray lensman."
"Gray?"
"We qualified for the badge," Martin pointed out, tapping his own lens, "but don't get assignments from Experts of Justice HQ. Sort of roving discretional agents. I couldn't be an active duty expert and a CID officer at the same time. My flying yak post takes enough of my time as it is. And God knows the fun I'd be missing if I couldn't go gallivanting after Carmen Sandiego anymore, he added, rolling his eyes. Uten appeared at Martin's lens, not so much at it as around it. It was surrounded by a segmented metal ring, which obviously held it in, but what it was being held into wasn't a bracelet or vambrace, but apparently the back of his actual hand. That looks like it must have hurt, she remarked. You really shouldn't show that off, Marty, Caitlin sighed, pushing her glasses up. That usually even grosses out people who already know about it. Sorry, he said, sheepishly lowering his hand. Well, I hope we can count on you for dinner tomorrow, Aiko said. We'll be having, well, everything I can get enough of, as usual. I'm sure it'll be great, Aunt Aiko, Kate nodded. Utrina began, somewhat unsure. I'll be with Kate pretty much the whole time I'm here, so if she's coming, I guess I am too. I wouldn't want to impose on you, though. Ah, phooey, Aiko grunted, waving away the mere thought of it. Another mouth to feed means we might have less than 5 pounds of leftovers this year. The Utoniums are out of town this year, Martin reminded. 10 pounds. And the Overstreets. 20. Oh, Crom, I forgot that, Aiko groaned, putting a hand to her forehead. We need a bigger freezer, she whined. Martin chuckled and lifted the tiny redhead into a playful hug. We'll just leverage the weather like we always do, honey. At least you remembered the Warners had to stay for official business on Anvilania. Aiko groaned louder and pounded her head on his shoulder. Or not. Geez, this'll be the smallest group we've had in years. Just as well, Caitlin smiled, clapping her roommate on the shoulder. Poor Utin has had enough surprises today. I wouldn't want to blow her mind when half the town showed up for the dinner bell. Speaking of which, Aiko chirped, hopping down from Martin's embrace, I'd better get back to work on mine or we won't be having any tonight. Thanks for bringing your friend over, Kate. Nice to meet you, Miss Tenjo. Thank you, Mrs. Rose. You too, Utina called and waved as the redhead vanished behind the kitchen counter. I guess we'd better hit the trail, too, said Kate. I've got to finish my Christmas shopping, and Corwin ought to be awake enough to drive us to the Galleria by now. Martin nodded and hugged Kate again. See you tomorrow, then, at the worst, he said, then released her and took Utina's hand, bowing. We'll see you again, Miss Tenjo. Thank you, Utina replied pleasantly, then buttoned up her coat and followed Caitlin out the door, pulling it shut behind her. There, see? Kate grinned, hopping down from the porch to the walk. He's a fun prude. Utina hummed a reply, something odd striking her mind as she followed Kate to the street. Kate? I just realized. The whole time we were there, whenever you were talking to Mr. Rose, and before when you were talking to your dad, you never stuttered once. You noticed, Caitlin smiled, spinning around to look her roomie in the eye, then back around to watch where she was walking. Yeah, that happens, or rather, doesn't. Utina opened her mouth again, but decided that was as much of an answer as she would get to that question, and let it drop.